in talking to you, Don, on the CMS experiment and the LHC experiment. It's actually a pleasure. It's the first time I'm here at the Perimeter Institute, which is world famous, so I'm very happy to be here. And I will be talking about, indeed, the LHC, some of our results. I will give a rather extensive introduction because maybe not everybody is fully familiar with what we are doing or what the LHC exactly is. And I don't know how often you actually get seminars of this kind here. And then I go through particularly to a few key measurements which we made in what we call the verification or the rediscovery of the standard model at 70 eV, so at the highest energies where we are. But spend most of the time on the searches, particularly for the Higgs supersymmetry, extra dimensions, some other conventional type of searches, and then also for some new type of signatures which we have been taught to look at by particularly the theory community in the past few years. So this is the LHC a bit, as you see it, when it was not complete. So you can see actually the structure of the magnets in here, how it looks like. These are the two beam pipes. So in each beam pipe, we have a proton beam going in opposite direction. Ultimately, they should have 70 eV of energy right now, this past year, this year, and probably next year, it will be 3.5 eV or maybe a bit above. That's still under discussion. 70 eV will come only after a two-year shutdown starting in 2013. These are, in sort of broad speech, the physics targets which we're taking, like the origin of mass of the elementary particles, nature of dark matter, which we could address particularly if we would be seeing supersymmetry, but not only. Understanding of space-time, thinking in, you know, would be already be seeing at the terascale something like extra dimensions popping up. I will tell you on our searches for that. And things which I won't address too much in this talk, but which are done by other experiments at the LHC mostly, is the discussions of getting more information on our understanding why, for example, we live in a complete matter world and we don't see the antimatter around us if everything started from a Big Bang, which was pure energy. And another one on which is a discussion not on proton-proton collisions, but also on heavy ion collisions, which is also something this machine can do. In fact, right now, today, maybe at this very moment, they started a lead-on-lead run in the machine for the last month of this year. The LHC is meant to be a discovery machine, so taking out in a new land and then exploring it for where we have some motivation of looking for new effects. And it will determine the course of the high-energy physics and in this field which we are having. So it's something which is very much looked forward to. So what is it in general terms? Well, for machines at the highest energy, typically what we're facing with is the questions of understanding what we call the mechanism of electric symmetry breaking. Why, for example, the gamma and the Z, the gamma is massless, the Z is so massive, and what is creating that? An elegant way of getting electric symmetry breaking is the Higgs mechanism, of which you probably have heard, and through the Higgs particle, which is associated with that. The other thing is then go beyond the standard model for which we believe that that's only an effective theory right now at the energies we are, but at higher energies, things may go wrong. And also, it doesn't actually explain a number of things as listed here. I probably don't need to go into that in too detail. But, well, there are also no connections with gravity in there, and maybe that's not a requirement, but it looks almost like a missed opportunity of nature that the forces do not unite. If you look at the running coupling constants, they come close, but they don't actually, in the standard model, cross at one particular point. Adding something extra in the standard model could actually make that happen. As said, it doesn't have to happen, but it looks like a missed opportunity if not. So there are a number of extensions which have been discussed over the last 10, 20, and maybe even more years, what could be happening. Of course, a popular one is supersymmetry, and we'll talk a little bit about that because people have high hopes for the LHC of actually discovering supersymmetry. A newer one, but now also by now over 10 years old, this is like extra space dimensions. We will discuss that too. But there is a plethora of other type of ideas around theoretical ideas and which have been developed in the absence of any data which was guiding towards going in the last 20 years or so. And that's what we hope this LHC is going to change for us. It should be giving us guiding data. Sometimes it's also called the Big Bang machine, and that is for this reason. Of course, we never really go to a point that we can create a Big Bang, unfortunately, perhaps. But we can come very close to the orders of 10 to the minus 10 seconds, getting the energy conditions which were at work at those times for the elementary proton-proton collisions, and with the heavy ion collisions searching for this primordial plasma or this primordial quark-gluon plasma, sometimes called, that would happen somewhere around 10 to minus 5 seconds in the evolution of the universe. So that's how we push back through the high energy, through that frontier here, and try to recreate the conditions, at least at these points here, which we believe can involve particles which, like the dinosaurs, are right now extinct, but which very well live there with high masses and which we try to recreate. Well, one of the flagship searches or measurements which we hope to go make is the search for the origin for particle masses, which, for the elementary particles at least, which could be, as I said, the Higgs mechanism. That's at least a very elegant way, just adding one term in the Lagrangian, which gives mass, but at the other end, with a special field, a scalar field, and that gives a particular pattern of mass generation it can give. And that could explain, for example, why you get these very strange mass patterns which we see with the top quark, which is like is almost as heavy as a gold nucleus, while the other quarks are very, very light indeed. So here you see a few of the gentlemen who were involved. Unfortunately, Braut died earlier this year, so he won't be seeing, unless he knows already by now, but he won't be seeing it, at least the LHC experiments discovering whether that mechanism is really at work or not. As I said, another popular beyond the standard model type of extension is supersymmetry, which is giving you an sort of the last unused symmetry which you can apply to in physics there, which is a symmetry between fermions and bosons, which predicts that for each of the particles you actually, which we know and assume that the Higgs is one of them, which would get, as part of the standard model particles, which would get discovered, then there is a mirror image of particles which are partners of the standard model particles, which are the SUSY particles, which have a difference. They differ by spin 1/2. And so, as for example, given here, and they get names like squarks for the quark partners and gluinos for the gluon partners. And that could solve quite a few enigmas, which we still have in the standard model, stabilize things, create a partner for dark matter, for example, and so forth. So there are a lot of theorists in the phenomenology world working close to the LHC who are actually betting money on these type of scenarios. Now, they got the first sobering effect from the first data which we are getting, and I'll get to that in a moment. So, as said, there is the enigma of the dark matter in the universe, which is most likely or almost certainly a particle which we don't account for in the standard model. For some time, neutrinos thought to be playing that role, but they just wouldn't generate enough of the gravitational effect which we are seeing. So typically now we're looking for beyond the standard model, new type of particle, and supersymmetry, as I will show, can give you to that. So seeing or not supersymmetry at the LHE has an impact also on the dark matter world. Now, new physics at high energies, what can it be? I mentioned supersymmetry, but there are many more type of variations or scenarios you can think of. There could be new gauge bosons related to new symmetry groups which we are having or which would be coming into observation at higher energies. And so that could lead to new, for example, Z bosons or W bosons. There could be resonance structures which are happening in ZZ or WW scattering, particularly if it would be not a Higgs mechanism which would actually do the electric weak symmetry breaking. We could expect effects in there. Technicolor is something that has been around for many years, and although it got a bit weaker at LEP because there were low energy particles predicted and they were not seen at the electron-proton collider at CERN at the time, it's still, since there is also no supersymmetry seen there, meanwhile, this got a bit back again. Extra dimensions where gravity, but not only, but typically in some models, just gravity can leave the three-dimensional space we are knowing of and goes up into extra dimension, becomes actually strong has been proposed. There are variations of a kind of these type of the models where also other particles can actually go into the extra dimensions. And if that were to exist, maybe the Planck scale is much closer to us than what we believe, and then we could perhaps also create black holes at the or micro black holes, as they are called, in an environment of high energy, and that's been taken sort of seriously that that could happen. And there are other kind of models like little Higgs, hidden valleys, and so forth. Clearly, we don't, as an experimentalist, we don't really know what is out there for us. We have no direct prediction. As I said, there is no data at the moment that guide one way or the other prior to the LHC data. So there is a large variety, particularly on possible signatures, which we would have to look at. All these things which are shown here have different signatures in detectors. So we need a lot of graduate students to go through all that and get all these things sorted out. We just have to be ready for that. And we have a lot of grad students. I will show that. So this is seen from the experiment point of view, but given by a famous theorist from Berkeley and also from Tokyo now in 2003, what his guess was how the theory space looked at of different things. You probably don't see this at the back, but there are all kinds of things, fractional charge, multi-charge, monopoles, symmetries, somewhere in there, super weak, milli weak, everything sorts of theories which people have been writing papers. And regions not thought of and so forth, what could happen to us. What did happen to us as an experimentalist, and that's you will see that history is repeating itself to some part, but if you look at 3 to 4 years back ago, the LHC should have been starting at that point like 3 years ago, but it wasn't. And of course, since it wasn't there, there was still no guidance to what could happen or not happen. So therefore, theorists made it like a sort of a sport to tell us what we are not going to see, or that we just build the wrong detectors to see something. So special signatures which would happen in detectors, heavy stable charged particles which would go through detectors for which we were not optimally prepared, hidden valley models which would make things disappear, appear, quirks which you don't even know what, want to know what that is. But there were things that really gave us headaches and kept us busy. You know, we were standing there with an almost ready detector, waiting for the collider. It's not quite like that, but almost. And but they kept us busy. So now we strike back. Now we strike back and actually start excluding a lot of this space here, even of the space I didn't think of yet. We start already excluding. And but it is still early days. Yeah, it is still at that point. You shouldn't panic. Say, wow, the LHC doesn't see actually a big discovery yet that we're in trouble. No, we are very beginning. We're very beginning with the energy of the machine. We are very at the beginning with the actually the luminosity machine. Although we're very happy with what we are getting, we expect like 100 times more. So, okay, so that's the machine, the LHC machine and the experiment. So it's nearby Geneva. Some of you have been there. It's a machine which is underground, 100 meters underground, 27 kilometers long. So it's a big thing. It's a giant refrigerator. It's operated at 1.9 Kelvin, which is minus 2.71 Celsius. I didn't put it in Fahrenheit, but you can convert. It has 9,000 magnets, 40 million proton-proton collisions per second will actually happen in the experiments which we have here. And there are 4 interaction points, but actually 7 experiments. So that's a very economic use of the interaction points we have here. Luminosities of the order of 10 to 100 inverse femtobonds per year after the startup phase. And luminosity is defined here as the number of events you're going to get per cross-section per time. This is a factor 100 more than at an other proton-proton machines which are there. So it's quite an increase. And the energy is also part of factor 3.5 to 7 higher with respect to presence accelerators. 3.5 now, 7 in future. And, since it's probably full of theories, this is how an accelerator works, just to give you the cartoons here. You have an accelerating phase and a bending phase. 9,000 magnets we have to bend. Not somebody handling this, but really solid in place. There are 7 experiments. 4 are central detectors or semi-central detectors. LHCb is not really a central detector. That's the one which is going to do the matter-antimatter type of studies, and in fact, the interaction point is here, and it uses a forward spectrometer to look into things. But the 3 mentioned here are sort of central, not necessarily symmetric, ALICE is not symmetric. That's an experiment for the heavy ions. But ATLAS and CMS, they are the high, what we call the high luminosity general purpose detectors. They will take the full maximum hits of luminosity, which can be given here. These work typically at a factor of 10 to 100 lower type of luminosities. And they are like cylindrical onions, if you want, with each layer in this onion having a different function for detecting particles as they are produced from the interaction region. And they are big. You see, this is a person standing here next to this experiment. And there's also a very small person down there standing there. This is the biggest experiment, if you want it, if size matters. So, well, I'm from the CMS experiment, so I will say a little bit on CMS. Not much. It gives a technical diagram here of an expanded or exploded view, as they call it, from the CMS detector. Although, realistically, indeed, we have these rings. We can take CMS apart in 11 rings, and it's been constructed like that. In fact, on surface, and then lowered 100 meters underground in these kind of units, like these rings, these end disks, and this is a central ring, which has its main feature. It's an enormous magnet here. That's a magnet with a diameter of 6 meters, and that creates a field of about 4 Tesla. That's a real, noticeable thing if the field is on and you come into the cavern, and even if it's, you know, it's shielded by all the return yoke you see around with the muon chambers in it, you feel the strength of that magnet. That's very big. In the magnet itself, we have a tracking system for seeing charged particles with silicon detectors and two types of calorimeter to measure the energies, an electromagnetic and a hadronic one. The electromagnetic is cute because that's crystals which are used for that, which were grown in China and Russia at the time. All right, so it's a large acceptance detector. The LHC runs now with about half the number of bunches it can have, which is about 1,400, and gets this kind of luminosity, 3.5 times 10 to the 33. That's only a factor of 3 away from design luminosity, but we can still have some more bunches and things like that. So this year was a particularly good year. Something like 5.7 inverse femtobomb was delivered and 5.2 recorded. It's still part of a commissioning year. We did not start this year full blast as it is here, but it was ramping up for 100 bunches, 200, 400, and so forth, to get where we are. And you see that in the smaller slopes here, in the steeper slopes you have there of the luminosity, which is being recorded. And that is telling that next year, when we start basically from where we come here, we're probably going to have more than 10 inverse femtobonds next year. So we will be in a normal production year for the LHC at, of course, still the half of the energy, but already that just got to get us quite along. And I said, as of actually today, it's not protons anymore being colliding, but lead on lead, which is starting. That's the sociology. So we are a collaboration which a certain number of scientists, which we can say is only bigger than, because it changes with daily. We are about, so I think, bigger than 3,200 scientists and engineers. Over 800 students we have working on that, and a similar amount of postdocs. And they come from 185 institutes in 39 countries. And you see a little bit of the picture that it's for real. These are persons here fixing something. Later on, this will shift in here. That's the beam pipe. And that's the end cap part, which nicely fits in here. Then it's all closed, and we take data. So this, I have too much running open on my computer. This should be a movie of a real interaction, a real event, which I'm not sure if we're going to get through. No. I better move that on. Normally, it's a smoothly running movie, but I think I have too much applications running open. I'm sorry about that. What you would get is an event coming out there, which you could see a real collision being formed. Maybe I'll try at the end again to run it once, but not quite now, which had two jets, two muons coming out, and a lot of missing stuff. There is a big imbalance in this event. And that, for example, was a nice candidate. We can never say for each event directly what it is, but it's a nice candidate for a die top production. So top quarks being produced. That was an event for last year. Top quarks, which were then for the first time actually being produced in Europe, out of, say, gluon-gluon, which is the dominant channel here. We produced TT bar, the T1T decays into a B jet and a W. The W decays leptonically into a charge and a neutral lepton, so neutrino, Similar happens on the other side. So if you count everything, you should find two jets which you have a beak walk in it, which we can actually experimentally identify that they have a beak walk in it. Two leptons, for example, two muons, and missing transverse energy coming from these neutrinos which are going here. And that's exactly what this could be. All right, so while we are dominantly interested in searches, we should calibrate ourselves and at least understand from what we expect from the standard model if we were producing that with what we think the theory is predicting and how well the theory is doing. And one can give seminars on that. In fact, I have to give four lectures at the school in a couple of weeks from now, exactly just on that. This is just a sort of a summary of a number of measurements which we have been doing. And if you've been looking at these kind of standard model processes, so some of you can know how meaningful that is, that within a year, you will reach this kind of precision on measurements of, say, purely dimuon spectrum, where just taking two dimuons, take the invariant mass, and you see all the friends of the past coming up, etas, rho, omega phi, shape size, chi primes, the upsilons, 1, 2, 3, s, you could see the z, and of course, we like to see a z prime here coming out, but not quite yet. That's actually very amazing that could be reached already during the last year. Inclusive jet spectra, so two jets being produced over many orders of magnitude given here for measured in different rapidity intervals. You see the theory agreeing very well with the data. Of course, this is a very compressed picture. In reality, you see theory agrees about the order of 20% or so with the data. The measurements of cross sections of W's and Z bosons and ratios of that measured to the precisions as you see them here. Z's going to tau tau, which is not a very simple channel to measure because of these taus we have there. W charge asymmetries, which are, for example, very sensitive to Parton distribution functions. And W plus jet type of measurements, which are very important for backgrounds for searches. All these things being done and much more on this standard model. And one more on the standard model, this is particularly in the stop quarks. So stop quarks we have now, we have already now more than 20 times more top quarks than the totality which is being produced at the Tevatron, for example, just by 1 year collecting data, and it will just grow. And well, we can see them, we can measure cross sections, we can even start to measure masses, although there the Tevatron is still the better one, but we're only about a factor two away. We can measure, for example, the difference between the mass of the top and the anti-top, and there we already beat Tevatron because of our high statistics. And in short, we have a very good picture of the standard model physics at 70 eV. With that, armed with that knowledge, you can start going for searches. Is it enough for searches? Well, it will never be enough. You're always going to go with searches to extreme values of the phase space to look for excesses in there. And so you'll always have to do special efforts controlling that. But that is already very good here. There are no big surprises in here. In one of these measurements, one of the related, so I would say, between search and standard model measurements is a search for rare decays, which in fact, for example, CMS wasn't particularly designed for to do that, but since we are, CMS, by the way, means compact muon solenoid. So the solenoid is from this big magnet which we have, muons because we have a very sophisticated and good muon system, and compact because everything had to fit into a certain space, which was a bit of a pain during the design, but it worked out well. Anyway, we should be good on muons. I showed the dimuon spectrum. So we can use that now to look for something rare. For example, a decay of a BS meson, so neutral meson, going from BN and S quark, which would decay, for example, into muons. And there is a standard model prediction for that, which is about that should happen in 3 times 10 to the minus 9 times such kind of decay here. We also look to the BD, but we are not quite close for that limit yet, so I won't say much about that. That, however, can be modified strongly if there is new physics around. For example, here you see two cases where you could have new charge Higgses, for example, running here, or even new particles, neutralino particles, if you talk in the language of supersymmetry, which could enhance these branching ratios. So it is important to look for that. And typically, in a supersymmetry space with tangent beta, this gets quite enhanced because of the power 6. So we've been searching for that with experimental techniques. I won't detail here to control the background. And in fact, we found something consistent with the background. Background in that sense being the standard model amount here. And for the moment, you see where we are. We are at 1.9 times 10 to the minus 8. So it's still like a factor of 5 away or so from going through the standard model value. But as said, in between, anything could happen there if there's some new physics setting on. Typically, with values of 2 to 3 times this value, you find a lot of supersymmetry models which are being given. So we are. This was with data. Maybe it's not given here on the plot. No, this was with what? Yeah, here it is. With one inverse femtobond, and as I said, we have now 5 times more, basically. So we should be able to get factor two better than this here, and maybe get into this interesting region already this year, in the next few weeks or months. All right, so what happened at the Terra scale is that the theorists got aware that the data are coming, and already in the months before, they were already giving us reasons why probably we shouldn't see anything immediately. So that propagated fast. Let's first have a look at the Higgs. So the Higgs particle, well, this is Mr. Higgs, in case you didn't see him, and this is the CMS experiment. There behind him when he was visiting us. It's our first seeing Higgs, as the not so funny joke goes, but anyway. Giving that, so we look for a scalar particle associated with a field with that kind of potential, which could potentially give us this mass description here. And there are quite a few processes that produce a Higgs particle. Once the Higgs particle is produced, it actually will decay immediately. It normally won't last with us, except in very exotic models, but normally decays, and we look at the decay products. But first, we produce it. That's a dominant process. That's the gluon-gluon type of fusion process. This is the second one. And these are processes which can help also if you, they are more rare, but they can help because they can be cleaner with respect to backgrounds and signal-to-background ratios. You see the cross-sections here. They are not so important, except that if you look at it, when we are running this experiment, we should be producing about a Higgs every few minutes or so in this experiment. So producing the Higgs is not going to be a problem. Finding it is the problem. And finding it is the problem because the Higgs is not a very massive object, we believe. Of course, we look for massive as well, but we are sort of excluding that. It is a lightish object if it exists, most likely. 100, 200 GeV in between there, that would be where most people put their money. And the decays are such that they are very unspectacular in a way. Unspectacular in the sense that it decays to B quarks, but we have lots of stuff going into Bs. QCD produces Bs plentiful. In fact, 5 orders of magnitude more than what we would get from the Higgs, even at the rate which I just mentioned, and so forth. So the big thing is there to try to find a signature over background. And by, for example, the decay to 2 photons is less than a promille of the Higgs, it's still one of the key challenges, the key channels to look at, because it has a better signal of a background ratio and it's very competitive. A spectacular signature is, of course, looking for decaying into 2 Zs and 4 leptons. But then again, if one of these Zs could be of Mars shell, so you don't really know if you have a second Z, and it makes it all a little more tricky. You see that for your pleasure here, what the branching ratios would be and what we are looking at. These are all the channels we have been analyzing so far. I have them all in the talk, but I won't discuss them all for sake of time. I will, for example, say this one. This is the 2 photons and the 2 Ws and how they look experimentally and what we are seeing there so far. For example, a Higgs decaying into 2 photons would give this sort of spectacular signature. Unfortunately, also background can give this type of signature. So what you really have to find is some excess over background, preferably a narrow peak in the invariant mass of these 2 photons over the background, which we are seeing here. And that's as you see with the data, the scattering we have now. If you do sophisticated analysis, you see that that is the expectation where the Higgs should be. And in fact, you see this thing here sticking out, which is a little interesting, but you know, it could be a fluctuation of the data as we had it so far. It's not statistically significant yet, but it's something which we have to watch, because that could be, for example, Higgs growing here. Now, don't go around and say you saw the Higgs here. That's not the message of this plot. The message is that there are fluctuations in these plots, they are done with 1.6 inverse femtobarn. We have now three times the statistics. And by middle of next month, we will open that box and see what happens and if this peak grows or disappears or something else goes up or what is happening so far. If you have such a thing, it means you also cannot exclude the Higgs to be living there, which so that is something to keep in mind for the exclusion plot at the end. A very difficult channel, but in principle very sensitive, is the one when the Higgs goes into two Ws, but then the Ws decay typically leptonically, so you have neutrinos escaping in there. And therefore, it's even less obvious if you see something in there whether you would talk about the Higgs or not. But it's a combination of all that information which is going to be at the end important. And here you see again what we find. We are a little above what we should be expecting to exclude. So it means we have a little too many events in there, whatever that may mean at present. The clean signal would be like, say, four muons, for example, from a Higgs to ZZs, and the two Zs go to the muons. They can also go to electrons. And that's a distribution of data which we have here. Similar type of Brazilian flag plots we have here with the one and two sigma deviations on the expectation, and the solid line is what we actually observe, which is quite close to the expectation here. And here again, we are a little bit above, if you want. This is the clean signatures, but we also have Zs, which is analyzed in other ones. These are the dominant signatures, the dominant channels right now for getting to a Higgs statement. There are others to taus, I won't explain that, but to Bs, which we also do is very difficult, but we are far away of reaching sensitivity to find the Higgs yet. You should be crossing this red line here. And we are still a factor of something away from that. But this is a summary of all the searches. It's a very complicated plot. But if you look at that, each channel has two lines. It has actually the observed and the expected one. And of course, where you stay above your expected one, this is the things you have to watch in future because something could be growing there where you're exactly on the observed or even better. It means then probably not much is to be seen there. And again, when you are, this is the 95% confidence limit on the cross-section with respect to the standard model cross-section. So this is for a standard model Higgs. This is what would be the expected cross-section there as function of the Higgs mass. And I'll show it in a more cleaner way what that actually means if you add up all these things. But here's the individual information of the different channels and the combination as well of everything, which I will show in a moment. So that is what our story is on the Higgs so far. So where could the Higgs live? Well, if it's a non-standard model Higgs, it can still live at many places because this, first of all, covers standard model decay modes, which are usually good for many other models as well, but certainly also standard model cross-sections. So if you have a model where you can dial down the Higgs production or a branching ratio of something by factor 2 or 3, you can save yourself in some areas. But there where you expect a similar cross-section or you can't get away with it, we know that in the range, for example, above here, this range here, the curve is essentially the whole time below the standard model expectation, so that there probably Higgs is not living. So the Higgs could still live here. Not many theorists bet their money on that, that it's a very heavy Higgs, but you know, who knows? As experimentalists, we have to be open to that. Or a Higgs could be living here. And this is an accumulation, as you see, of a little of excess we have above expectation, which is the dashed line, which also lives here. But here you're actually below the standard model limit already. So if anything, I think somewhere between 140 to 120 is where our attention will be now with the 3 to 4 times more data, which we have accumulated since the release of this plot, which is two months back. And there it's where it could be still living, if it is there at all, a standard model like Higgs with standard model like cross-sections. If otherwise, of course, it could be still anywhere. Now what's going to come up is next week, actually. This is for the CMS experiment. The ATLAS experiment has a very similar exclusion region. And in fact, we have made a combination between the two experiments, so you increase the power of that, and that will be released next week. That's embargoed to for the conference at the end of the week in Paris next week. Then by December, we will actually release our full data set for this year with the five inverse femtobarns. Then we go on to the spring conferences, maybe even combining with the Tevatron, depending on what we see. If we see something which looks like a signal, maybe we don't combine with the Tevatron. We'll see. Now, that has consequences. Pushing the Higgs away out of this region here, standard model Higgs away out of this region here, has consequences, which I just want to allude to, since I'm sure as theorists you appreciate that if you were to think that the standard model was the answer and was actually being able to bring you to the Planck scale here all the way without anything, with some enormous fine-tuning, of course, which would have to happen in that case, but technically could be done. Once you get into a Higgs which is going to be like 130 or lower, so you're going to hit a bound here somewhere where the electric vacuum gets unstable and you need new physics actually to stabilize that. So that would be a very strong statement if we were to find the Higgs, say, at some random number, 125 GeV or so, we know something has to happen. It could be out of the range of the LHC that it happens. This we can't guarantee, but something would have to happen. And here, this we're already excluding, as I said, so you don't need to worry about that. Okay, so let me turn to some searches for new physics. So for supersymmetry, as I said, and I explained that we have this partner which should be produced, from which the only thing we know is if they exist, they are more massive than the partners of the standard, that the normal standard model partners which we have, because we haven't seen them yet, so they must be hundreds of or maybe TeV type of mass scales which are involved here. This is the way how a collision supersymmetric particles get produced at the LHC. If we assume that supersymmetry is a quantum number that is conserved, a technique called RP conservation, then we will produce supersymmetric particles in pairs. That's one consequence. So as you see here, for example, we produce two gluinos. Again, as for the Higgs, these particles are expected in most of the models, but more and more models are trying to go different ways, that these particles would decay immediately. And they would typically decay possibly in long cascade change, like is given here. Sometimes they don't have to be as long, but they go into cascades with producing jets. Leptons could be there. And at the end of the cascade, there should be always a particle in this RP conserving scenarios, which has a supersymmetry quantum number, but it's the lightest guy. So it can't decay anymore because it can't shake off its supersymmetry quantum number. That's the lightest supersymmetric particle, which then is doomed to live forever, so to be a stable one. Now, that's a virtue in a way, because in that sense, you could get, and like in most models, it is a neutral particle coming out here of the order of 100 GeV, could be less, could be more. And that would actually settle the bill for the missing mass which we have. It is and could play the role of this dark matter. And that's this connection which we have with dark matter studies. And maybe in that case, if that would be the way nature works, we could produce dark matter in the lab. But you see, if we look at many signatures, or we have a very complex system here, unlike with the Higgs, where we saw that it just goes to two simple objects and we can combine it, which had low mass. This is the other thing here. This is a site where we expect high masses, several hundreds of GeVs, but difficult to reconstruct because you get these many cascades. So what we do is to start with this typing, do cut and count type of measurements on the data sets, looking for characteristics where, for example, these particles escape. They're going to give missing energy in the event, and where you can have typical different characteristics on the final states here. And so we have lots of boxes of analysis which we have to look for supersymmetry. Supersymmetry cascades in which there are no leptons at all, just jets and some missing transverse energy coming from these LSPs, from these light supersymmetric particles. Sometimes just one lepton, two leptons with opposite or same sign, three leptons or more, photons instead of leptons, photon plus lepton, and so forth. They all have virtues. In terms of backgrounds, backgrounds are largest here, lowest there, but they are mostly strongly produced more. There's a cross-section, the highest here, lowest there. In any case, we try to map out the full spectrum of these topologies and look in each of these boxes if we see something special happening. We also need all sorts of tricks to get rid of the standard model backgrounds, the ones we measured before. But as said, although we measure them well, we're going to use corners of phase space where we're actually not 100% sure how well we control them. So we need to invent methods to do that. I'm not going to give the details. It is one giving here a method on basically on kinematics, figuring out how a SUSY event would look different from a pure QCD mismeasured event, giving missing ET, for example. The interesting anecdote here is that that's something what was given to us by an extra dimension theorist who looked at that. In fact, Lisa Randall came up with this idea, and in fact, it worked very well. We actually used that in the experiment, and it works fine. So this is a result, and this is a way we present the results. Not the only way we present the results. In fact, it's a not much liked way that we present the results like that, but it's an easy one for us. And that is, for example, in the context of very constrained models. Before the LHC started, they thought the easiest target to shoot at is very constrained SUSY models and see if it's there or not. If it would be there, then SUSY world would be very simple and easy, and we could work with things. Constraint means that while supersymmetry in its theory itself is like over 100 parameters you can play with, you can sort of freeze on everything to like 4 parameters, intercorrelating all the others, and then that's a constrained version. You only have to vary these 4 parameters to get the phase space in this constraint model. So we've been interpreting our results, our search results in that, and that's what we call an exclusion plot, where we exclude the region below here, and that's still open for us. There are some lines due to the light, they're not fully seen. They are equivalent to masses of particles, like the 1250 GeV line for the squarks, the 1000 GeV line, here is the 1000 GeV line for the gluons. So in that sense, this puts into masses which we are excluding, we are starting to exclude gluinos and then squarks in the region of 1 to 1.5 TeV within the context of this constrained model. If you relax parameters again and you have more of them, maybe 19, like in some models, then these constraints are not so strong, but still they are like 5, 6, 700 GeV or so. So one thing is this supersymmetry is not around the corner as what was hoped for, maybe by some studies, which I will show in a second. It's actually a bit further away. And in fact, here we have no signature for it yet. This is a complicated plot showing all this boxes analysis, which I showed before, on a similar exclusion plot here. In this, I didn't specify it, particularly in this universal gauge genome mass at the gut scale and the universal scalar mass at the gut scale. Oops. I showed you this red curve in that one. But there are many things, and they all come together. And on this curve, they don't look very competitive, but they all have their reason of being for reinterpretations, whether it's one lepton, two leptons, and so forth. This is an interpretation which is more generic. This is just in very simplified processes. What could happen? Hadron collisions. You produce a gluino, and the gluino decays immediately, for example, into jets, and the light is a supersymmetric particle. And for a number of these, we see that. And I should mention here that that was particularly by Natalie and Philip very much promoted in the experimental collaborations about a year ago. And I think now both collaborations are using this way of representing their data rather than also just simply these plots which I showed before. And particularly, turns out to be very useful for theorists who want to recast their own model in the context of the measurements which we have been making by using this simplified model as a sort of translator between that. We do see interesting events, so you should not go out depressed here, that there is definitely room for something that may happen. For example, this is an event with 5 jets, which has a total energy in here, which is 1/7 of the total energy which was there in the collision. And there is something like 700 GeV escaping out of that here. Now, it can happen that by some chance in a standard model process, yes, such an event can happen. So we cannot say this is a SUSY event. But you know, it's tempting to say that something like that looks actually very exciting. So we need more of them. We need to see that they're actually above background. And if masses are really high, then it can take a little more time, a little more data to do that. Maybe I won't say too much about it, that there are interpretations, and there are diehards, and I'm actually one of them myself, who work with these constrained models, try to put in all world's data of precision measurements, which we have, also the G-2 data, which does not quite agree with the standard model, and the dark matter constraints, which we have, and see how it could all fit together with supersymmetry in this space. This is the same plots as I showed before, but these are now contours where we would expect SUSY to show up before we had the LHC data, which was small contours with the best value here, and after the LHC data, when it is there, say, okay, if you do that, it doesn't matter if you have LHC data, you just push up your masses, and that's all what happens. Well, not quite, there is more. There is also, you can look, this is the same plot here, but the probability that everything fits together. And that gets now, while we before were comfortably living with fits, which give you like 40, 50% probability that all world's data was fitting together in a SUSY model, actually here it isn't anymore. It's something like 16% in, again, in these constraint models. So these constraint models really get into trouble, and they will be disfavored soon, I think. But there is a lot that you can do still for SUSY going on. And there are many ideas around. As I said, they came up already before the first data was seen, going to other cases, more difficult cases where the masses maybe generate. Maybe the third generation is important, and others, as given here, I will not go too much on that. But I will come back to what should be needed from supersymmetry for it before people are starting probably to give up on it or giving, or really starting to get second thoughts about it. And that's by somebody I think you know in this institute very well, who gave a talk last week at CERN and in a workshop we had on rethinking SUSY or something like that, we call it. And this is compulsory, what should happen in SUSY. The quarks which we are pushing up to TV regions is not yet a disaster. It would be a disaster if we would find that the special ones, the third generation partners, the partners of the stop quark and the left-handed bottom quark, if they were really very high mass, say above 400 GeV or so. We can't exclude that yet because they have a much lower cross-section than the other ones which we generically reject with maybe six quarks and gluinos rejecting. The gluino also couldn't be too high, but we said above 1 TeV, and you know, there is still some room, but in the next 500 GeV or so, we should be starting to see gluino happening. And there should be a Higgs around somewhere at 120 GeV or so, give or take. These are not absolute numbers. They have some numbers, but these are just ballpark numbers where we should be seeing. So no panic yet, but we are approaching. We are approaching from this side, and right now our studies go to about 200 to 300 GeV for the stops. And so we are getting there, and then we either have to see something or some people have to rethink SUSY indeed. In fact, there are workshops around, and I just came from one this week in California, where they talk about hidden SUSY, so SUSY sitting here under the iceberg, as we see, where you get all kinds of new scenarios. So these are already, you know, I don't know if they are job preservation policies or really, you know, good ideas which we do. But we are back in a situation that we were 3 or 4 years ago when I told you the experiments were challenged. And they were, you know, when we said we can do SUSY, we can do this, that they told us, yeah, but there are these special particles, you won't see them, you have to do something special. Now it's the same story with SUSY. They tell us all where it can hide and why we would not have seen it. And how we have to go back and try to see it. For example, look at 6 jets or 8 soft jets or something like that. Yeah, you have interesting names like Stealth SUSY and Collective Arbitrary Valley SUSY. Well, I won't go into detail, but it's a new sort of industry starting. And it's actually interesting for us because, of course, we want to be as exclusive as possible in doing that. Okay, there are a couple of new analyses, but as time is running, I will not particularly go on that. I mean, with the experts, we can always discuss a bit later. I'll leave SUSY now. I'll go to extra dimensions. And that is what I've shown before, that there is a possibility that, for example, gravity could expand in an extra dimension beyond the 3+1, which we know of. And in some other models, in fact, even also some elementary particles can do that. And you can have two brains and things like that in warp dimensions. So many things go. One in consequence of, for example, such a scenario where graviton move away is that when you look where the electric force and gravity meet somewhere at the Planck scale, that would be probably a mirage of what we are seeing here. But once we come into higher energy here, if this new dimension breaks open, gravity gets stronger, and the real Planck scale, if you want, would be much closer to us. That has experimental consequences if that would happen, and these are the signatures which we're looking for. For example, one signature would be is if such thing would open, that you would have a much stronger coupling to a whole tower of what you call gravitons, which could be emitted in a collision made in a proton-proton collision, and they could balance off, for example, against a gluon or a quark jet. So what you would see is a graviton weakly interacting, escaping the detector, and on the other hand, you would have one jet here, the so-called monojet type of signature. And we are measuring that, and you see this is already, for those who put money on extra dimensions rather than supersymmetry, the sort of limits we are putting on this new Planck scale. It has to be above 2 to 4 TeV, depending on the scenario of how many extra dimensions you're actually having. You get a stronger bound if you have less extra dimensions going on. Coming from a spectrum like this, where we measure, in fact, the monojet spectrum as seen in detector. The point is you see monojets in the detector because it's not only this channel that contributes to this, but also a standard model process where you have a jet balancing against the Z boson. The Z boson decays into neutrinos, exactly the same signature. That's our main irreducible background here. Another one is for the, instead of having a jet, having a photon there, graviton-photon type, so a single photon balanced by nothing. This is a nice event, which you can get like there. A similar type of background, photon plus Z, Z going to neutrinos can give that, could be this here. And at least all the data we see is consistent with the background. You don't get a strong limit there, but it's sort of like a confirmation in a different channel. So, we don't see extra dimensions yet, but one way of looking for them also would be, and that could give an earlier signature for discovery than the two ones I mentioned before, would be looking at the formation of micro black holes. In some case, when really the cross section would be very high, just a geometrical type of cross section, then you could indeed see that even before you would actually be sensitive to that with this monojet measurement. So how would that look like if you indeed have a larger Planck scale now, an effective Planck scale where things are happening and where gravity gets real strong? You would also have a larger Schwarzschild radius, so particles coming close by, they would produce something which it would immediately evaporate according to Hawking radiation, as we believe, and as my theory friends tell me, in less than 10 to the minus 27 seconds, so completely innocent. So that's the only black holes we're really interested in. Now, how do you look for that? You see that it's very spherical emission of energy coming out here. And it's that what we measure. We measure the total sum of energies coming out here. We want them to be at least like 20% of the original energy of the proton-proton collision coming in. Measure that and see what if you have structures which are very spherical and blow up like something in many, many jets or jets plus leptons and things like that. And we have analysis running on that. And you see the result here yourself. This is the background estimate is the blue part here, which we do with data-driven methods. This is the real data lying over there. And well, apart from this outlier here, you don't really see an onset of what the data should be doing if there were something like that being produced in the data. But it leads to quite nice events, for example, this analysis. This is a 10-jet event, which we see, which looks a bit like the nature that I showed before, but again, the standard model, you expect this to be produced at occasions, and we find exactly that rate so far. So we do have a team of black hole hunters at the LHC, and although I said they are very safe because they will decay into the minus 27 seconds, we do advise safety helmets in any case if you study black holes. So there are many other searches going on, and I could spend another hour on all the things which we've been covering, which probably would be slightly boring because if there were something where we saw an excess right now, this seminar would have a different name, it would have a different content, would have a different emphasis. So we haven't. These are all things on which we presently produce limits, best limits in the world, but so what? We are not really interested in limits. We are actually interested in seeing something. So we're vigorously looking, even in many more channels than what we have here. And occasionally, of course, you see a fluctuation, and then we get excited, and then we put it on the desk for a while because, you know, the luminosity is increasing, and we wait. And then so far, there is, I'm afraid, nothing yet to report on anything that state. Although I should say there are still three things lying on my desk, and we will see by the end of the week. But if it goes like before, we will stay with this kind of picture. And I won't go through all of them, but since that was something which was asked over lunch even, this is the limits we are getting on Z primes, for example, where we would expect signals to set on, which would be measurable in regions even up to 2 TeV or so, and we are actually not seeing that. So these are our present exclusion limits. I won't go to Technicolor, neither to this, although this is a very nice one. If right-handed Ws were to exist, there is actually a prediction that they should be seen before they get about 2.5 TeV or so. Otherwise, they miss the purpose for their way they exist here, and we are going to approach that very soon. We are at 1.6 already. Let me go to skip these because I think. So, last part. Last 5 minutes or so of what I'm going to discuss. This is what I meant with these signatures, which were given to us like 3, 4, maybe already 5 years ago, and told this is going to be particularly difficult for these kind of experiments because you didn't build these experiments to see that. That's right. The experiments which we designed were in the middle of the 90s. They were built at the end of the 90s, beginning of the years 2000. And these are things, many of these, not all of them, they came up somewhat later. Like, for example, cases of split supersymmetry, Gravitino dark matter, Hidden Valley models, special RPV models with long-lived particles. Everything has something that there is a new particle produced. And unlike what we did so far, assuming that all these particles decay immediately, and we look at the decay products of that, like we did for the Higgs, for SUSY, even for these extra dimension cases, here we're going to have a particle that maybe lives long enough on the time scale of going through the experiment. And that time scale is like an order of 30 or 50 nanoseconds or so to move through the whole experiment here. If it lives longer than that, it can give a signature from a heavy particle, which is completely unusual compared to the normal particles we'd be seeing. For example, a massive particle of 400 GeV could move through the detector here. If it's a lepton-like particle, it would look like a very heavy muon or so moving out here. But for example, it would not move with the speed of light. It would probably move with some like smaller speed, maybe a beta of 0.8 or 0.7, and that would have consequences. So we had to actually retune our detector a little bit to make sure that we capture these particles, that we actually don't lose them, that we don't throw them away. Bizarre particles could even change charge while they are moving through the detector because they go through dense materials of calorimeters and through to re-interactions. They can pick up charges randomly and change charge. Things like that could happen. And in the most weirdest way, they can actually stop in the detector, sit there because they lost all their energy just by ionization energy. They are so heavy, they lose a lot of energy. They stop in the dense material, typically in the calorimeter, and sit there, maybe a few seconds, maybe an hour, maybe a week, and then they splash open, lots of energy going everywhere. And for that, we had to redesign the trigger of this experiment that also, when there is no beam in the machine, we actually keep the detector alive, and we look to see if something is happening. And we do see them. Most of it is cosmic, of course, but there could be things happening here. So that all helped us to make more of the experiments. And if you want, we can write more papers on that. But unfortunately, more exclusions because, you know, this is typically when there is beam in the machine. This is for the stopped analysis. Beam in the machine, beam in the machine. You see some events coming out. There is beam in the machine, but there are abort gaps in between. The machine is not fully filled. We see some events happening which have nothing to do with a collision itself, and that could be such a stopped particle which is just sitting there decaying and then going to pieces. But we didn't find it yet, and these are now limits which we put on. But okay, our theory friends gave us a scare there, and a few others. I will not go into that. Now, in all, and then wrapping up in a moment, when you have so many channels to look at and so many different final states, can you actually miss something? Can there be some channel, because it just happened that nobody suggested to look at two like sign muons plus a photon and two jets, for example, that it's not been looked at and therefore it's been missed? A priori, yes. We have these 800 students, but we have many more ideas and channels than for 800 students. And by the way, they are not all working on a different one. There are many of them working on the same in the Higgs, which is not actually so healthy, but anyway. But we have a fail-safe system, which we think, to some extent, is a fail-safe. And that is a system that we actually let something do by the computer and see what he would make out of it. Namely, we tell that for all the events, throw each event in a single box, depending on a high PT characteristic in the event. Is it a high-energy electron, a high-energy photon, or a high-energy muon, or two-energy electrons, and so forth? Exclusively, each event will be thrown in a box, say one electron plus a photon, one photon plus three jets. So it can only enter in one of these boxes. And we have something like 60,000 of these boxes. And then, now we can't do a data-driven analysis for all of them, but with the Monte Carlos, which were not so bad, what I showed, because we understand the standard model very well, compare automatically with the standard model and see if there's a bump, if there's an excess in something in quantities which we calculate here. The sums of the PT, some invariant masses we are making, the missing ET in that. Very primitive for the moment, but that could be an alarm system. If some box suddenly turns red here, the two muons plus photon gives many more events than what we would expect from the standard model, from our theoretical input of the standard model now, as tuned on the standard model measurements which we make. And so we would have to look in that in detail. So we did play that game for the data of 2010, and there were no outliers in there which we saw, which we have to watch for. But of course, that was only a small fraction of the data. We have more than 100 times now, and I'm curious when we open this box here to see if there are a couple of red lights flashing up telling us you have much more in there than what you expect. Doesn't mean it's new physics yet. Could be that in our mix of standard model process, we forgot one, or there is one which we thought wasn't important, became important, but it would be a good guide. Anyway, so if you have a favorite model, these are our limits now in scales where we are for these different models as they are. As I said, I didn't want to show you each one in detail, but this is a grand summary of that. And we have Kaluza-Klein type of gluons, leptoquarks, whatever. Many of the things is here. If you have more ideas, let us know. We'll look at that as well. And this is the simplest possible summary I could give from this talk, which I usually say, but probably I shouldn't say that here, but I usually say that even can be understood by string theorists, but there may be string theorists in the room, I don't know, so I don't want to insult anybody. This is the lower limit on new physics as set now by the LHC experiments. It's three numbers, but it's simple numbers. It's 1, 2, 3. So it's easy to remember. You only have to remember one is for SUSY type of particles. We are now pushing till beyond 1 TeV. 2 is for gauge bosons. We are pushing now beyond 2 TeV. And 3 is for colored objects, like colored quarks, like axi gluons and so forth, which you could make with the highest cross section. We are pushing these now to be beyond 3 TeV if they exist. They're going to be at these masses. So that's as simple as it can get. Fine. What will happen now? We'll run still for a year, 2012. And then we'll have a shutdown for 1.5 years or something like that, called phase zero shutdown, where we will do some fixing on the detectors. But particularly, the machine will be upgraded to go to 13, 14 TeV. Then we will be running at different luminosity modes. And then here in this around 2020 or so, we'll have to upgrade detectors quite a bit because then we go to a very high luminosity mode. We will get about 10 times more luminosity per year than what we're getting now. What happens after that is unclear. People think about still higher energy upgrades. It's impossible, but at that time we should have something like 1,000 times the statistics which we have right now. And these are rather pessimistic numbers, as I'm told from the, not pessimistic, very, very conservative numbers from the machine. And in fact, if you look at the machine numbers for this year, they predict you would see one inverse femtobond. We got actually five. Now, we can't be lucky all these years, but I think there's still some room for a bit higher. And if you look at what it could mean, that's a plot I made with a colleague once in terms of years, it's the luminosity profile. That's what we're going to get in the next years, and what could be the discovery benchmark points on the way which we have here. So like Z primes here, SUSY with masses of 3 TeV, compositeness, and so forth. And beyond that, far beyond, as I said, there is first the high luminosity option for 2020 to 2030, maybe high energy, which is being thought about, that could be up to 28 TeV or so. It would need a replacement of the machine. And if some people have good ideas for that, they also think of putting an electron machine to have electron-proton collisions. So that's basically it. I'll just like to stop with a slide, which, in fact, Toyoshi showed at a very important meeting at CERN last. It was the ICFA meeting, which is every 3 years, and there is a meeting where normally you don't laugh with the content. It's very serious about linear colliders, muon colliders, everything else they're discussing there. But he was giving the review how he feels as a theorist right now with the LHC data. And and he brought up this picture here where you see the LHC putting some stress on the theorist there. Okay. So, summary. So the searches are on. The LHC has entered new territory, and the Atlas and CMS experiments are ready for searches for new physics. Most popular example is SUSY, but there are many others which we're actually covering. At this point, we have no clear sign of new physics yet in this first 1 to 2 inverse femtobonds, which is a fraction of the date of the year, a little less than half of what we have collected when we stopped a week ago. And that other fraction is now being analyzed. And soon, within weeks to a few months, we will see a full statistics coverage of that. And we'll see if that remains like that or actually something is starting to build up. It starts to cut in what was called the preferred SUSY region, or the simplest SUSY region, if I should say, rather than preferred. The air for the constraint models is getting very thin indeed. And we'll need to dig deeper ourselves. Input from our colleagues, from you, is very welcome, because we use that, and we had this workshop, as I said before already, where we go into more elaborate scenarios to try to dig deeper. Okay, there is also some room still, because not all analyses have been updated to this one inverse femtobond. As far as the LHC is concerned, that did this great part this year. It was a great run this year. Much more than what people originally expected that they would get. So we get really a very good data sample, which is going to allow us to say something quite conclusive about the long mass range of the Higgses going on, and maybe even seeing the first hints of some things, some signal that doesn't want to go away. And by the end of next year, we should have like 4 times more even than that, and maybe even slightly higher energy. That would, of course, help the searches. So let's see what's going to happen. I think the winter conferences could be very interesting this year from what I saw so far. So let's stay tuned for that. Okay, thank you.
Was there anything interesting from the heavy iron collision?
This year or last year?
This year,
the interesting part which may come from the heavy ion collision is that they're going to do proton ion, which they haven't done last year. So that's a new mode for the accelerator to run in. And I think that would be very interesting to see also with this jet quenching, which we saw last year, to do that in these measurements and look at some of the other suppression modes which we'll be seeing. So it's going to be it's always considered a bit as a calibration source for the quark gluon plasma measurements, and I think it's going to be, it's very useful. It comes so early in the game of the science program for heavy ions. So I think that is the most thing. The other thing which I would like to see is production. We've seen production of Z bosons. They are simple and they are not suppressed like this expect from like the weak bosons going through this kind of matter. We should also look with in detail more like to the W bosons, because with this run of heavy ions, which is going to be a factor 20 more in luminosity, we should have a real good sample of clean Ws, and you never know if there's a surprise out there.
Go ahead, John.
What do you expect the strengths of the technical
interaction? Yeah, so I skipped over that. I can show what we have now. So we're looking now for technirhos to be produced in three lepton final states, mostly in the WZ type of analysis. And that gives us constraints of this sort, of the few hundred GeV. Now, this is in a particular Straumann type of model from Ken Lane. If you look in more generic models, then you have weaker constraints, and then you come back. I think we would be technirho going to 2 mu, for example, would be setting limits about 200 GeV or so. So I think with this run, 200, 250 GeV is the mass ranges we're going to have generically. In specific models like this one from Lane et al., then it's going to be probably a bit harder, but a bit more. But typically, that's the kind of constraints. With the full data set from next year, we should be getting up to 400 to 500 GeV.
There was a CMS preprint a couple of weeks ago showing like a pretty big excess in the diphoton differential cross-section. Is that
in the which one?
The diphoton differential cross-section. There was like
the diphoton?
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Okay, that's not new physics.
Okay.
At least as far as I would judge so far. The reason why we see that, you see this discrepancy when you compare to models, when we compare to the QCD calculation. Now, the thing that has been criticized for that is that the analysis you do in there is you ask for a very asymmetric configuration. You ask for one photon, I don't remember, say 20 GeV, the other photon 40 GeV or so. That pushes these calculations into trouble. That's a very asymmetric type of calculation, and that they don't grab the phase space well enough when they do the integration for getting the cross-section right. So theorists tell us, hold on, don't take these numbers too seriously of our predictions, because we know that this is a very unfavorable type of thing for the kind of proton we have. But when we do the more symmetric cross-sections, we see no discrepancies. So it's only when we do that in the asymmetric ones. Now, I'm saying too early, no new physics. I don't know. I just wouldn't actually press it as new physics right now. It's a QCD measurement, I think, where we're going to learn about how to do the QCD calculation better in this asymmetric case, and then we will see. And then we'll have to see what comes out.
So which of the winter conferences do you suggest us to go?
I wouldn't go to Aspen yet, but maybe go to Morion. And that what the underlying thing is, by when did the experiments will actually validate their results to be shown. And we are now on track for two things. For the Higgs results, we are on track to do it just in December. We should see the full statistics from the experiments from this year. And for most of the searches, the Morion Electro Week conference is targeted as a sort of a milestone, so people work under that time frame. We won't stop something if you know, we have something major and we see it earlier just because the conference isn't there, it will come out. But typically, if it's something major, it may even take more time because people scratch their heads a bit longer. But I would say go to that one.
All right, if you have any further questions for Albert, he's in office 468 just down the hall here for this afternoon. So let's thank him very much.